Bonus.com. Staging in the left.
Welcome to Making an Impact. Sitting here with Pastor Terry. Pastor Terry, how are you, man?
Well, I am doing wonderful. After taking a week off last week following our program, we took off to the beach, spent a little time on St. Simon's Island, and...
Welcome to another good radio. For some reason, our intro is delayed. That's why it sounded kind of funky. You never know these things till you hit the button. Sometimes you hit the button. And
sometimes the button hits you.
Sometimes the button hits you. Tonight, the button hit me. So, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Goat Rodeo. My name is Jeff Gilder. So tickled to be here. Let's get around and say hello to everybody joining us by way of Skype tonight. Coastal Jack Walker is in the house. CJ, how you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm doing good, man.
Good to have you, even if it is by Skype.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just a few miles down the road, but I'm going to have some cataract surgery coming up, and the eye doctor wanted me to take my contacts out for 2 weeks prior to the measurement sequence, so I didn't feel real comfortable driving at nighttime tonight.
There you go. I don't blame you, man. We don't need you getting hurt. You got a Carolina Race Place historic race finish for us?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Going to Hickory, tonight? North Carolina. Hickory.
Oh, it's always Hickory. Interesting.
That's cool.
Yep. All right. 1974. Yep.
All right. Wow. Also joining us via Skype, the legend, Tim Leamy, is with us. How you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you, but if I have to mute my mic from time to time, my allergies have been in high gear today, so the sneezing and the clearing my throat has become too commonplace.
Got it. I understand. You got a legendorial for us tonight?
I do, for a fact. Yes, I do.
What's it about?
Well, tonight I have entitled it Torches and Memories.
Oh, man, you have such a way with titles. You know, your titles are just like poetry.
Well, what they tell me is my titles always stink, so they have to be changed.
We could change his name to Tim Sandberg.
Tim Sandberg.
Oh, buddy, Carl.
The track not taken.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go, Tim Sandberg.
That's right, two tracks converged in a shape. Good.
And one long I stood.
One was good. One was fast and one was slow. So which one would you go, Bopper?
There you go. He's got it, man.
Yeah.
All right. Way to go.
Yeah, you can't hide talent. Tim Sandberg, ladies and gentlemen.
And ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Charlotte, North Carolina, from Bobby's Auto Parts,
the home
of the endless warranty, there he is, the man, the one, the only Bopper. How you doing tonight?
Hey, Jefferson. Good to be here. Good to see you. We got a big show.
Good to see you.
We got a big show tonight. So you want to tell us what you're going to do yet? Well,
Jack said last week, he said, you know, I wish you would really go back to doing ghost tracks.
Oh, okay.
Yay.
So I might start a new series called The Bopper's Favorite Ghost Tracks. The inventor of ghost tracks revisits ghost tracks. Now it's become a generic term. Everybody uses it. But it started here.
Started here,
ladies and gentlemen. All you ghost track users in America.
And abusers.
Yeah. We invented it. Yeah, we invented it.
That's right. We claimed it. We named it. We claimed it.
Yeah, we just didn't patent it.
Like some people have done.
We should have. All right. Next to him is the man on the street, Splitter, the Hewlin Oval Crash. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing just fine.
You got any Hughes views on the news tonight?
You know, some days you're the windshield and some days you're the bug.
That's it?
And today I'm the bug.
is that what you got tonight?
That was Hughes news, ladies and gentlemen.
You've heard my views.
All right.
I may come up with some ravings, ramblings, but yeah. No, I don't
Extremely
have a thing on paper.
On your part there. No, I didn't say pathetic. Prophetic.
Yeah, so, yeah. I heard you.
All right, that's cool. Let's get right into some racing. What's going on out there, Tim?
Not much.
I want to ask you something. You
Sir.
Brought up a question before we went on the air and said you didn't know if we wanted to talk about it on here or not, and I think we'll just lead off with that, so take it away.
Well, my brother Richard called me earlier today, and he said he wanted to know why when Kyle Busch wrecked somebody in the truck race at Texas a couple of years ago, he got part for the cup race the next day. When Matt Kenseth took out Joey Logano at Martinsville, what, 2 years ago, last year, 2 years ago. He got suspended for two races. And yet Austin Dillon took out Cole Custer out of the Xfinity race while Cole is running for a championship. Took him out intentionally, on purpose, wrecked him. And there has been nothing said by anybody with NASCAR, nobody. So I asked the question, why? And so then you gave me his hypothesis on why that probably was, and it makes sense the more I sit here and think about it. But, Hugh, you want to take the lead on that,
well,
since it was you?
I heard a rumor, and that's all I can say, because I don't even remember who told me, but somebody that would be somewhat in the inside circles in NASCAR told me that Monster Energy had whispered in NASCAR's ear that they thought stuff like that should just simply be left alone. And
well,
if you'll notice the incident with Kyle Busch and who was that, the Logano's crew?
Logano.
That went unanswered. And apparently this Dillon little dust-up has also gone unanswered. At least we haven't heard anything out of NASCAR about it. And it makes sense to me, as you said, it makes sense to you. We have a new sponsor. The sponsor, in some respects, calls the shots. We all, us old-timers, remember the era that Winston sponsored NASCAR. They didn't make any big issue out of it, but for those of us that were privileged to be behind the scenes a little bit, knew that what Winston wanted, Winston got.
And including everything in NASCAR painted red and white.
Yes, absolutely. Well,
but even the short tracks.
Well, Winston or Reynolds Tobacco Company showed up with crews in red and white paint and says, "Hey, Mr. Promoter, would you like your track painted?"
I know. I worked at Columbia Speedway when the tractor trailer pulled up from R.J. Reynolds, and they took off these 5-gallon cans of red and white paint. And, I mean, literally, everything in that speedway was either red or white or red and white.
Amen.
Yeah.
We all watched it happen.
All right. So Hugh, you and Bobby talk for a minute while I dump Tim and Jack so I can add Cody. For some reason, it's not letting me add him. So
well, we will see if we can't fill up the airwaves for a few minutes.
So you're saying that the sponsor wants to let things play out sort of the way they used to.
Well, that's the feeling that I get. I don't have anything concrete, and it's certainly nothing official, but I have heard that that's their feeling, that they would like to see it just play out, if you will, on the track, how it used to be 30 years ago in NASCAR. When they had
they had the famous Allison Brothers versus Cale Yarborough at Daytona, which most experts agree started the modern era or the modern TV era. I don't recall anything happening from that, any kind of penalties being handed down. Maybe I forgot. I just don't recall.
Well, I remember there being something. And the only reason I remember that was I remember a statement that Bobby Allison made about that he felt that NASCAR owed him a big amount of royalties for what he did, and alluded to the fact that NASCAR had fined him, and I'm assuming Cale and Donnie as well, for the little altercation, which I found to be ludicrous when NASCAR has profited mightily over that little tiff.
Well, there was not, if there was anything, it was very insignificant.
Hello.
Any kind of punitive action,
it certainly wasn't.
Nobody
played
was
up
banned
by the media
or anything like that. Matter of fact, I remember the next week at Rockingham, there were bed sheets outside of town said, "Welcome to Rockingham Round 2.
Yep. Bed sheets. Y'all hear? No, y'all can't hear me.
I can hear you, Tim.
We got you, Tim. Cody, you're there, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay. Everybody's on.
Is everybody
Cody
here?
Yep.
Hey.
Yep. Yep. Carry on.
Well, we hadn't introduced Cody yet.
Hello. Cody Densmore is here all the way from Dawsonville, Georgia. Welcome to the show, Cody.
Well, thank you very much.
Good to see you, buddy.
Yeah.
All right, now everybody's been introduced.
Now everybody's been welcomed.
Yep. So carry on.
We was just ad-libbing about the NASCAR penalties for altercations, which appears to be
or lack thereof
kind of backing off this year from previous years of really ratcheting up the punishment. And the theory source seems to be that Monster is behind it, so which could be. I mean, that's a good theory.
Well, they're the ones wanting to bring pre-race shows to be fights. Is that not what I read somewhere?
Well, I read that they want to do that, and I don't remember who it was they said wanted to do that. How many of y'all remember the pre-race activities at Charlotte Motor Speedway for years when Humpy Wheeler was the track president? They had boxing matches. They had a sure enough real life boxing ring that they set up out there in the grandstand for boxing matches before the races.
I remember going there one time. They had an air show. That was pretty cool. Had a biplane that could turn all kind of flips and mess. Smoke trailing and all that kind of stuff.
That was Humpy has put on some really grandiose shows. I was privileged enough to have worked for the track during all that era, and seen up close and personal most of those shows. And they really, for those of you that didn't see it, it certainly rivaled anything that Hollywood has done before or since.
They Monster's apparently putting on some stuff now, but before the race starts out behind the grandstand or something, they're having monster trucks and motorcycles and mess jumping stuff, and they've shown a little bit of that from time to time. So apparently pre-race stuff is going on from the Monster regime.
Well, do y'all think Monster is getting their dollars worth, so to speak? Well, maybe they don't have that many dollars to sprint.
They're not.
You don't hear the word Monster that much.
It's certainly not like it was when Reynolds was the sponsor. Every other word was Winston Cup.
Exactly.
I don't know whether it's because people haven't acclimated themselves to the even what they're going to call it. It has such a long name, and everybody seems to think that they're going to shorten it to something. But I'm afraid that because it has such a long name, a lot of people are hesitant to call it anything or to try to shorten it on their own.
They last year they had the driver's names on the front of the windshield. Remember that?
Yep.
At the top of
right.
This year, the driver's names on the back of the windshield and the little monster things on the front.
Yep.
Yeah.
I had forgotten that they had moved the driver's names off of that shield at the top of the windshield.
I've also noticed they got a sponsor on right above the windshield on most of the cars, the rear windshield.
Yeah, right. Yep, that's true. I've noticed that. And the monster girl always shows up in victory lane very close to the winner.
Well, yes, in various numbers. They have certainly done that. Of course, so did Sprint. Their little girls that had fire suits on and pasted on smiles. Monster girls have less on and more realistic looking smiles.
Even back before Winston, there was Trophy Queen, so that's hardly.
Remember the Union 76 Race Stoppers?
Yeah, that's
absolutely.
That's really not a new idea.
No,
that's sort of status quo.
The Monster Energy girls seem to have a little more flair and a little more personality than the Sprint girls did. I always felt like they looked to me like they had some place that they'd rather be than being sprayed with champagne in Victory Circle. The Monster girls seemed to take it in stride and think, oh, well, that's just part of it, and go right on, keep the smile on their face, and we're happy to be here. But I guess it's a matter of perception, but I can't help but believe Monster Energy people saw the same thing and say, hey, look, y'all need to participate.
Has it ever been revealed the size of the length of the Monster contract? Does anyone know the hard data on that?
I have not heard.
Well, wasn't it at the first of the year that it was a 2-year contract and they were paying $50 million a year, I think it was.
Yeah, that was a rumor that it was 2 years.
Well, I seem to remember the 2-year contract, but I don't remember if I ever heard a number. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. I'm like some of the opinions that have already been ventured tonight. I'm wondering if they feel like they're getting their money's worth.
Okay, here we go. What is that, $20 million a year, Alex?
$20 million a year,
Alex. $20 a year.
That's what Alex just posted.
Seemed like I have read that now that I see that. Okay.
Yeah. It was 2 years and $20 million a year. That sure is a big come down from what they were getting a year just a few years ago.
It just amazes me that it costs $20 million to sponsor the series when it's Nature's Bakery was suing for, what, $12 or $15 million for the... just the car.
That's lawsuit is really getting more active. Everybody's suing everybody.
I haven't kept up with that, so I don't know who's doing what for Nature's Bakery.
I can't, guys, for all you folks listening looking for the feed, you're going to have to go to Facebook and watch it. I've been trying since the show opened to get it to post on the site, and it won't post.
So what does that mean? We're not on the air?
Yeah, somebody, we're on the air. They just
can't see us.
They can't see it from the website.
Oh, yeah, well,
somebody changed something.
That may not
something.
Be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can go to Facebook on the Racers Reunion page and watch it, but it's still showing Patrick no matter how many times I change it here. So.
Well, get busy. Fix that.
I've been busy.
That will make Tim mad.
What will make me mad?
Patrick's smiling face on here.
Okay, here's something. Who was it that posted? This is probably Patrick. Not Patrick. I'm sorry, Alex. Alex's post on the chat line about the Toyota. I mean, about the TV listings of the various things this weekend. We're usually concerned about NASCAR, but the IndyCar race, Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach, drew a whopping .27. So, everything is relative. That makes NASCAR's 2.5 look pretty good. But the Masters was up at a 7.6.
Oh, they stole a lot of it this weekend.
Do we know what the IMSA race was on Saturday?
Yes, .58.
Oh, wow.
.58. They must all have been online.
Cody, was that the Cadillac race you're referring to?
Yeah.
That, I don't know about the rest of you. I watched a little bit of that on TV, and I found it very disconcerting that there was a Cadillac won the race. It's psychological, I know, but plus the fact that thing didn't look a thing like a Cadillac.
All right, let's get into our segments. Let's do it. Are you ready for that? Y'all ready?
Anytime.
Who wants to go first? Cody, is that your hand I see?
Sure.
All right, take it away.
I got a tall hand if you can see it.
I see it, man.
All right, so.
Which finger is that, Cody?
I gave him a thumbs up.
Oh, okay. I just couldn't
He's
tell.
He's got a long thumb, sir.
From this distance.
Sure does.
So I just wanted to talk about, you talking about Monster, trying to get the fans back involved with the pre-race shows and whatnot. And I was reading earlier that they released the rules format for the All-Star race, and it's going to be, I don't know if you guys talked about it in the first 5 minutes I wasn't here.
No, we did not.
Awesome. So the All-Star format's going to be the 1992 format, which was the first time under the lights. It's the 25th anniversary of it. So they're going to do, I believe I read, 420 lap segments and a 10, or 320s and a
320s and a 10.
But, you know, regardless, that's to me, that's cool. They're wanting to do a throwback to a more successful time, for sure. But it's also reading that they're going to offer a tire option for the All-Star race. From what I've been reading, they have the possibility of running a softer compound for next year, and so they're going to give the teams the option at the All-Star race so that you can run the softer tire or you can run the standard Goodyear tire that they've been running all year. So that kind of has
that will make life interesting for the All-Star race, exactly. Sure enough.
But you've only got one set of soft tires. You can use them anytime you want to, but you've only got one.
Now, can you practice on them?
They're going to let them practice so they can get a handle for how much faster the car gets. But now, then once the race starts.
That reminds me of the 80s when they had the Hoosier and Goodyear Wars.
Yeah, and that made life interesting for racing, that's for sure.
So, you know, here lately the All-Star race just hasn't been exciting, especially last year. Whatever format they decided, and everybody was just so confused, the drivers were confused and put a lap down and, you know, whatnot. So I find this really exciting, and I'm kind of excited to see this.
The other thing, the last 10-lap segment is only going to have 10 cars that you have to earn your way into that.
Okay. I didn't read that much. So
I'm not sure I like that in the fact that 10 cars get lost on Charlotte's track.
They sure do.
That's the downside to that is that only 10 cars is really a small amount for that big a track.
But that's kind of like their chase thing. It's an elimination thing.
Right, elimination. I understand what they're doing. I'm just not sure that it's going to look good.
Yeah. At one point this year, there was some rumors that they were going to run the race on the road course at Charlotte.
Yeah, you're right, Jack.
But I don't know. I haven't heard any more about that. And wasn't it rumored at the time that they were going to do the All-Star race on the track oval in the road course?
I would love to see another road course come up. To me, road course racing is some of the most exciting racing out there today, just in my opinion. But I was reading on J-Ski here about the tires. It says that the option tire setup utilizes the same speedway construction as the prime tires, but with tread compounds formulated to provide more traction. The option setup is projected to be 3 to 5 tenths of a second faster per lap out of the box. So I would say whoever has that, I would go ahead and guess that who's ever in the top 10 the last 10 laps are all going to put those on, and it'll be a show.
Yeah, unless you're trying to make the top 10 and you got long odds to get there.
I would say if you run them before the last segment, and because I think they're going to have a green letter tire to signify the difference.
That's unlucky.
So if you're running green or yellow,
it may stand for money.
Last segment, monster. Everybody else is running green, I'd say you're left in the dust.
Yes. I figure that most of the teams will save the gumballs for the last segment. Because how many is 10 laps?
Yes, 10 laps.
10 laps. So you can run gumballs for 10 laps.
Seems like Charlotte, ever who gets out in the lead, that's pretty much it. Almost nobody can run them down,
If you have, like this year, a less aero car and gumball tires, it might increase the competition. I will certainly be watching to see what the competition looks like with those circumstances.
Well, it'll certainly increase the spectator, people looking at it on television and going to the stands.
To me, NASCAR and Monster Energy needs to start advertising those facts.
Yep.
Much more so than places like us, old-time race guys, talking about it. They need to put that out to the general public so that they're aware of what may be fixing to take place. I can see an epic race if it pans out the way they want it to. It could still be a ho-hum race, I don't know, but it certainly has the makings of a real shootout with the parameters they put on it and the option for using real soft tires.
Harold, sounds like it'd be quite challenging for the teams to decide what they're going to do and when they're going to do it.
Now your crew chief earns his money.
Yeah. Because also, it's not just whoever was the top 10 in segment 3. It's whoever has the top 10 best average finishes of the top 3 segments get into the final. So you've got to constantly stay at the top.
Yep.
For all three segments.
There's a lot to be said for this new segment racing as far as competition goes. I think it has enhanced the competition throughout the race quite a bit, in my opinion. They're now racing hard for the top 10 positions in each segment.
Here's something interesting, though, to come up demonstrated concretely at Texas. Ryan Blaney just dominated the first two segments. I mean, no one could touch him. But then through a series of pit stop interaction, he wound up deep in the field for the last and never could advance. I mean,
yes,
he was
I noticed that after
in the water.
After the pit exchange.
And that's hard to understand how you can be that. Or is that the clean air effect?
I think a lot of it's clean air. But you're right. He got put back through no fault of his own, but through pit exchanges. What was it? He was out of sequence with the rest of them.
No, it was absolutely strictly 100% the fault of those stage racing. That's what it was. Because he and about five other cars, they were coming up. They had like three laps to go to the stage ended.
Yeah, stage two.
When they threw that caution flag, everybody came in but Blaney and about five or six other guys who were going to wait to the stage, you know, because they were out front. So they were going to wait three laps for the yellow flag indicating the stage. So they came in, which put them behind the 20-something cars that had stopped under the yellow flag. So whose fault is it? Is it Wood Brothers? I would highly doubt that. But it was just a situation that they caught themselves in because of the stage racing.
Well, it's a learning experience.
That goes back to what I said about the crew chiefs earning their money.
But yep. The other thing is he couldn't advance. My point is not none of that. It's that physically he couldn't pass nobody.
Yeah, I think that was clean air effect.
If a car was that fast, you would think, well, it won't be that big of a deal. We would just pass our way back through the front, but he never could. That's hard to fathom how that works or doesn't work. So, but he was never a factor after that, after the pit strategy thing. And then they kind of got desperation one time and the car fell off the jack and this, that, and the other. But that was already the
he was already mired back in the field when that happened.
Yeah.
But that there again, he was back in the field and the pit crew was rushing, trying to make something happen, and ended up having a misstep, and that really costs you nowadays on pit road. If you have the least bit of a bobble, anything, car slip off the jack, drop a lug nut, it just any kind of little slip up and you're way back in the field.
So Cody,
did you
get finished?
Yeah, it was just I wanted to shout out that.
And then, I forgot Cody was on.
You get him started, man. Somebody's got to run this show now. That's why I'm here.
Hijacking is back in style.
All right.
I think it ever left.
So,
Cody, good job.
Yeah, speaking of hijack, Coastal Jack, take it away.
All right. Tonight for the Carolina Race Place, historic race finish, we are going to the famous Hickory Speedway. 200-lap late model sportsman race. Hickory Speedway held a 200-lap NASCAR National Championship late model sportsman race on Saturday night, June 22, 1974. The race was named the Winston 200 and was run on the famous 3/8-mile paved oval. Many of the top late model sportsman drivers from the area were at the track chasing late model sportsman points. The race was postponed the week before because of rain, but on this night, 5,000 fans turned out to see one of the best races of the year. National NASCAR points leader Jack Ingram of Asheville, North Carolina, was there. Butch Lindley and Bosco Lowe, both battling for second place in the national point standings, were also there. When the race started, Tommy Houston took the lead. Just before the halfway point, Bob Presley of Asheville, North Carolina, blew his engine, spilling oil on the track. Morgan Shepherd, who had been running with the leaders, spun his Pontiac Ventura in the oil. Shepherd's car had only minor damage. He lost two laps in the pits doing repairs. During the restart, Butch Lindley, who was leading at the time, missed a gear, which dropped him to fourth behind Tommy Houston, Jack Ingram, and Bosco Lowe. Charging through the field and making up two laps with the help of caution flags was Morgan Shepherd. Also making his way to the front was Butch Lindley. Houston, Ingram, and Lindley were three abreast at one point fighting for the lead. Lindley banged fenders with both Houston and Ingram and finally took the lead. Lindley held the lead to the checkered flag on lap 200, winning $1,200 for the victory. Lindley also won a similar event at Metrolina Speedway in Charlotte the night before. So here's the way they finished. June 22, 1974 at Hickory in the Winston 200. The winner in the number 16, Butch Lindley, Greenville, South Carolina in a Chevelle, followed by Tommy Houston, Conover, North Carolina, Chevelle, Jack Ingram, Asheville, North Carolina, Chevelle, Bosco Lowe, Fletcher, North Carolina, Chevelle. Coming in fifth, Morgan Shepherd, Conover, North Carolina, in a Pontiac. Boyce Eckert, Hickory, North Carolina, in a Chevelle. Glenn Jarrett, Newton, North Carolina. Jim Poovey, Hickory, North Carolina. Jim McClary, Massillon, Ohio. Alan Letterman from Vail, North Carolina, came in 10th. Judson Devine, Lincoln, North Carolina. Jimmy Lovin, Kingsport, Tennessee. Lester Sigmund, Conover, North Carolina. Bob Presley, Asheville, North Carolina. Coming in 15th, Jimmy Klein, Statesville, North Carolina. Lester Sigmund, Conover, North Carolina. Junior Crouch, Taylorsville, North Carolina. Clarence Ogle, Swannanoa, North Carolina. Larry Wallace, Pineville, North Carolina. Coming in 20th, Charlie Presley, Asheville, North Carolina. Dale Earnhardt, Kannapolis, North Carolina. Ronald Fox, Taylorsville, North Carolina. And finishing in the final position, the 23rd position, Harry Gant, Taylorsville, North Carolina. So that's the way they finished.
At the famous Hickory Speedway.
Hey, Bobby, Charlie Presley, Asheville, North Carolina. Is that Bob Presley's brother, cousin, or do you have any idea?
That's a good question, Jack.
That's the first time that name has come up on my...
Charlie Presley.
Charlie Presley.
I was going to say that, also add that Tommy Houston is a regular in the Holden Beach area. For the last many years, has a house down there and can often be seen in and around the area. So he's
Jimmy Lovin that you mentioned.
Yes.
Here's the tie. Is the brother of Joe Lovin, who owns Volunteer Speedway and owned Kingsport Speedway for a long time.
Cool.
While you were mentioning Butch Lindley, I was googling when he got in his, what ultimately proved to be his fatal crash, and it was in 1985, and it was at DeSoto Speedway.
Yep, in Florida.
The same place as Dave Steele just a couple of weeks ago in that sprint car.
Was it paved at that time?
Yep,
it probably was.
Yeah, it was paved. It was a hit-the-wall head injury kind of thing. Of course, this was eons before Hans device and all head restraints and all of that. But remember, he was in a coma for like 5 years. Butch Lindley, I don't know that that was a NASCAR race. Seemed like it was one of those off-season races. Kind of like a snowball derby thing.
Could be. What year was it, Bobby?
1985 is when the crash occurred.
I'll try to do some research on that, see what I can find out about what kind of race that was.
Yeah, for some reason I don't. It might have been NASCAR, but I don't think it was. But that's, you know.
All right. Next up, the legend with the legend, Torrio. Take it away, Tim.
Okay, as I told you tonight, it is entitled Torches and Memories. On a cold January afternoon in 1961, a young newly elected president of the United States stood on the Capitol steps to deliver one of the most memorable and quotable inaugural speeches I've heard in my lifetime. While there are many quotes from the speech engraved in the minds of those who heard it that day, as well as in the hearts of many who believed we were seeing the beginning of a new America, the one line I want to use tonight is, "Let the word go forth from this time and place that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century." All of us here tonight over the age of 60 also have memories of an afternoon in Dallas, Texas, a little over 3 years after that speech was delivered, when the young president was assassinated and the world changed. I guess one of the reasons I use the JFK analogy tonight is the race Sunday was in Texas, and as I sat and watched what unfolded before me on television, I could not help but think of the passing of the torch to a new generation, as that number 21 Ford with Ryan Blaney aboard was in control of the race through the first two stages. In my opinion, the stage racing deal robbed young Blaney of the win, but that is neither here nor there. As I watched that Wood Brothers car make coleslaw of the competition, my mind went back to the days when that car was a Mercury, emblazoned with Purolator on the quarter panels and David Pearson's name on the door. I remember the days I cursed that car and those infernal Wood Brothers for beating my man so often, especially in the 1976 Daytona 500. I am so happy that I had the chance to personally apologize to the Wood Brothers a couple of years ago and shake the hand of each of them. On Sunday, I saw the torch, if not being passed yet, at least getting ready for the handoff as in a relay race. Oh, Jimmy Johnson won, of course, but look at the runs by Ryan Blaney, Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, not to mention such future stars as Cole Whitt, who doesn't have the top-notch equipment of the other three mentioned. There are other youngsters getting their start right now who ensure a bright future for NASCAR. Future stars, we hope, will return some of the personality to the sport that we all know has been missing. When my Uncle Bobby first started taking me to races, it was Lee Petty we pulled for, along with Curtis Sturter and Tim Flock, but Lee Petty was the man. When I met Richard Petty in 1958, I decided to rebel and pull for him, and Uncle Bobby opined that Richard would never be the driver his father was. I have vivid memories of the 1961 season when all three of Uncle Bobby's drivers were out of racing, Lee because of his Daytona accident, and Curtis and Tim because they dared to take on Big Bill France. I really thought my Uncle Bobby may give it up, but he didn't. He decided to come over to the Richard camp, and we went to Daytona in 1962 so he could see the track where Lee's career ended. That Sunday, Richard finished second to Fireball Roberts, and my uncle had a new respect for the kid from Level Cross. The torch was being passed in 1961 to Richard Petty and some kid from Spartanburg who won the World 600 on three tires and a wheel. That kid was David Pearson. Others would enter the sport in the early 60s who would contribute so much, but who now seem to be brushed aside. By the end of the 60s, Bobby and Donnie Allison and Cale Yarborough were added to the star train. Remember Fred Lorenzen entering the sport? Nelson Stacy, Larry Frank? Later, Jeff Bodine, Harry Gant, Bill Elliott, Alan Kulwicki, and others? Remember the independents who made the sport? Just to name a few. Earl Brooks, J.D. McDuffie, Jabe Thomas, Elmo Langley, Wendell Scott. Wow, that list could go on for an entire show. Just as the day our president was assassinated, I remember the news release in 1991 that 1992 would be my driver's fan appreciation tour. I was devastated at first, but then realized all the years of pleasure and excitement that number 43 had given me. I attended several of the races that year using my press credentials to be in the garage and pits to aggravate the king. It came time for that final race in Atlanta, and I just could not bring myself to go. I guess I assumed if I wasn't there, his retirement wouldn't happen. But it did. And in retrospect, the torch was passed that day to a young Jeff Gordon. In reality, the torch was passed to an already successful Davey Allison and Alan Kulwicki. both of whom lost their lives long before their torches could light those of the next generation. So as I watched the race this past Sunday, JFK's line came to mind. I see the torch being passed to a new generation of drivers, molded by their desire and the talent to become the next stars, the next champions. I'm thinking if Jimmy wants that 8th championship, he'd better get it this year, because the wave of the future is coming. I will end on this note, once again quoting the president, though not exactly precisely. Quote, ask not what NASCAR can do for you. Ask what you can do for NASCAR. We all have our opinions about all that is wrong with the sport, but we have the power to bring it back to close to what we once knew if we realize the potential of what is coming our way. I'm already wearing my shades for that bright future. Thanks for listening, and back to you, Jeff.
I couldn't find my button there for a minute. I'm back now, though. So,
welcome back.
So do you believe that last paragraph?
That it's going to come back?
Read it again?
I just threw a trash can in the last paragraph.
Yeah. That's not
right. You know what I finished with them. I dump them. All right. I will end on this note, once again quoting a president, though not precisely. Ask not what NASCAR can do for you. Ask what you can do for NASCAR. We all have our opinions about all that is wrong with the sport, but we have the power to bring it back to close to what we once knew if we realize the potential of what is coming our way. I'm already wearing my shades for that bright future. The reason I say that, Jeff, is because with people like Ryan Blaney coming along, Kyle Larson, they seem to have the talent, they seem to have the desire, they seem to have more of the old school charisma, if you want to use that word loosely.
So what you're saying is if we get behind them and be as emphatic or a fanatic,
supportive
as you were to Richard Petty, then it could come back.
It could come back. I really believe that. I already have my ticket to the Southern 500 this year.
Who sponsors Ryan Blaney?
Fastlane.
Yeah, he's got two or three different
Ford,
sponsors. Yes,
a Quick Lube division.
So Tim, have you taken your Mercury Marquee down to Fastlane yet?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I have. Okay. I have been in there. Yeah. So yeah. I'm trying to support them, and I do believe...
That's a good answer, man. That's good, yeah.
No, I do believe that... Alex just said Motorcraft. That's what I was trying to think of. Thank you, Alex. But I do believe with people like him and Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott coming along, we've got some good drivers if NASCAR and Monster doesn't manage to ruin them.
Well, Tim, I'll have to agree with you. There's a direct correlation if you take a half a step back and look at this new crop that's coming and compare them to the new crop that were in place or coming in place at along about the time of Petty's last race. Had never thought about it that way, but you're absolutely correct. This new bunch, if you squint and don't look at the names and the faces.
Well, I think Tim was drawing a comparison between them and the young Dave Pearson and all that kind of stuff when he was...
Well, that and the new crowd that's coming along today compared to the crowd in the early 90s.
Isn't that what you were doing, Tim? I mean,
well, yeah, that's basically what I was doing. But what I'm saying is even more to the point, this new group of young men that we have coming into the sport now are not the Kyle Busches and the Denny Hamlins and you know, all these people that came in with an attitude or a seemingly you owe me everything.
Entitlement. Attitude. The entitlement.
Crap. Yeah, entitlement. Thank you. Yeah. That's a good word.
I would like to add that last week Kyle Larson was on. He said in an article that, in his opinion, if drivers would start participating more on the local level, it would help re-energize the upper level, which is essentially what we've been saying forever.
Yep.
And he's not only saying that, he's doing it, you know, racing sprints and midgets and things like that on the local
scene. I did Duracer. Yeah.
And there's some great short track racers coming up even below the NASCAR scene, like Ty Majeski and Harrison Burton. And they're going to end up in NASCAR and be stars at some point. And they're like the Kyle Larsons of the world.
Kyle Larson and Ryan Blaney and Chase Elliott, are all three of them are from basically blue collar racing families. They're not silver spooners, not really. I mean, yep. Kyle Larson in particular, talent got him to where he is.
Yeah, that's raw talent. So let me go back a little bit. I'm listening to this group here. We've been doing this going on 8 years, 9 years, whatever it is. Seems like longer. And we've gone from recognizing the falling of NASCAR and all kinds of criticism and going through the therapy of dealing with the loss of something that we all loved that was near and dear to us, to the point now where I'm actually seeing some of you old farts getting behind this thing and saying, hey, we just like Tim said, we can change this. We can bring it back. I think that's pretty interesting. Cody, you see the same thing?
Yeah, I see the same thing because, you know, you say 8 years ago, I mean, racing was all right, but, you know, there wasn't that many people to pull for that I think we could all relate to. Another driver I would add to your list of maybe not that young, but I think Brad Keselowski is along the same lines. I've become a Brad fan. A lot of things he does off track I really enjoy, but he's still coming from the blue collar, had to work his way to where he's at, kind of racer.
Yep.
But yeah, I agree. I totally agree with Brad.
I've
liked Brad Keselowski since he came into the sport.
So out there by guts and talent.
So let me go back and ask a question. I don't know the answer to this. I'm just asking. Y'all may know. We went through a period of time early on where you build what you wanted to race, and you take it to the racetrack, and you race, and you earned your way into the show, okay? And the sponsorship grew and grew and grew. It become more of, you know, who can get the sponsors and who can do that. And it got to a point to where if you wanted the ride, you had to bring the big check with you or bring the sponsor with you. So it have we gotten to the point to where sponsorship's so tough to get that it maybe not playing such a role in who's driving the cars?
I think so.
Yeah, that could very well be.
It's beginning to change.
I think the talent and saleability of a personality is coming back into the sport, i.e. Carl Larson.
I love the idea that talent could win out over money.
Amen.
Yeah, me too. That should be the determining factor.
And this has absolutely no negative connotations as to Danica Patrick. But my big complaint with her, if you remember when she first came into it, was she came in and she got the top sponsorship, the top ride, because she was a female. While we're overlooking all these guys.
Well, she brought a huge sponsorship with her, too.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, that was my issue with her. And, you know, the whole deal with that is now we've got these young drivers that are getting their due. That are coming in there. It's like I mentioned Cole Whitt in the same vein as I mentioned those other three guys. Cole Whitt is a great driver. Cole Whitt is a dynamic personality. I spent a lot of time around him, and he has got everything that it takes to become one of the top drivers. The only thing he's lacking is the sponsorship and the money to put behind the car. But Cole Whitt, when he gets that break, is going to be another one up there running for it.
Yeah,
I would also say Alex Bowman, but there's not really any room for him. He kind of proved himself, and he got in there on talent. He doesn't have any sponsorship backing.
Well, I mean, you'll never outrun money. I don't care what the deal is. So if the talent lands you a job on a team that has the money, that's one thing. But if you're the guy bringing the money in with marginal talent or girl or whatever it is, then that's where I had a problem with it. You know, and I'm just asking the question, is it possible that cycle has come around to the point to where we're back to that? And if that's the case, since it's moving in that direction, will we ever see the situation with 30-some cars showing up for the field that a guy can go build a car and bring it to the track and try to get in? Not without a charter, right? How does that work?
Well, yeah, you can without a charter. What is it? The three or six cars can get in without charters. They're having trouble filling the field now.
So anyway, they may have to increase that to 10 or 12.
Well, what
if the charters aren't filling it?
That's true. But what I'm seeing now is that we have more talent than we have sponsorship dollars. And don't you know that those sponsors are saying, maybe I ought to be putting my money on this kid. Yep. He's more talented than the one I'm sponsoring today.
Yep.
So and that I think will be a really, really good thing for the sport.
But if you think about that, I keep thinking about that cycle, you know, and where we are in that.
Well, it appears to be changing, and in my opinion, changing for the better.
Yep.
We'll see.
Yep. Yep.
I think we're going to see a lot of changes in the sport in this season.
Well, it's going to have something has got to change. I mean, everybody agrees on that point that it's got to start becoming a sport again, and not such a controlled entertainment entity that just generates numbers on some kind of scale. It's got to get back to something real, and I think that's where all of us got off track at, was when it became more of an entity than it was a sport or a passion. It was just somehow it was an accounting exercise.
Yep.
I guess the 2000 decade was a lot of that was and caught up in all of that was cutting old tracks off the schedule and moving the big markets, and we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and they forgot the fact that it still had to be a sport and not just a some kind of cash cow vehicle, which that only took them so far and lasted so long.
So what was your segment about?
We just have to save it for next week.
We're getting carried away here, man. We're going to have to put up a schedule or something. I don't know.
If you watch the Texas race, Tim, this was kind of enjoyable when Blaney was mired back there. Or it might have been during that time they come up on Coy LaJoy, and he wouldn't get out the way and this, that, and the other. And Blaney finally just sideswiped him.
Yeah.
Like, get out of my way. And I mean, but that's good to see. I mean, he probably damaged his own car, but his emotion, yeah. You know, sort of got the better of it.
Yep.
But do you realize that Kyle Larson in what, the last five races, has finished second four times and won once, or maybe he's finished second five times?
Well, you got to go back to last year and look at the races at the end of the year just to know how damn strong he really is.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's what the Chip Ganassi car that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shouldn't be, you know, that
was
fast.
Absolutely.
Nothing. I mean,
absolutely.
It was nothing, and now it seems to be the class of the field.
McMurray's doing decent, too.
Late in the Texas race, Larson was on a tear, and he comes up behind Harvick and just flies into the first turn right up on the back of Harvick, yeah, to the point that he got the whole idea was to get Harvick loose, yep, and it worked.
And it worked, yeah.
That worked. Yep.
It worked, and Harvick washed up, and he went under and went on. But, I mean, that was sort of an intimidating move.
Yeah.
Those of us who are not particularly Harvick fans got a good chuckle out of that, because we've watched Harvick do that to other people, just like the number three car used to do it to other people all the time.
And Larson said after the race, he said, I learned how to pass people down there in one.
Watching people like Harvick.
Yeah, without going into any detail, he learned how he did.
Well, what's y'all's take on the high and mighty JGR Toyotas?
They're having
can't
a struggle.
Fall out of a tree, can they?
They're having a struggle. Yeah,
the only Toyota that's running, and of course I know it's a JGR derivative, but is Martin Truex Jr.
And Cole Pearn ought to be the man they ought to all be asking.
Yeah.
He's got it figured out. They are competitive. The stage racing stuff kind of bit them too, but they're in the hunt. Yep. The 78 car is in the hunt.
Every time.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, I just can't understand why JGR apparently is that's their sub team. And was Eric Jones drives the other car, right?
Yeah, and he's pretty good. He's pretty good.
You know, he's a short tracker that's come on
board. He's real good for a rookie.
Yep.
Yeah, he is. So there's another young guy that's coming up.
He kind of worked his way into talent. And the way I understand it, his father had a big Corvette operation dealership or something up in Michigan, wherever he's from. But I was at the Snowball Derby, I think in 2012, when he outpaced Kyle Busch. and that impressed him just off his talent. So that's another one there.
Yep.
Yes, sir. I think you still got to have talent. You know, it's hard to get there without it. Money is indispensable. It won't take you, but so far.
Speaking of talent, don't y'all forget this coming Saturday at Dublin Speedway.
You'll see a lot of talent on display there.
The Bell & Bell Vintage Modified Series starts its 2017 season. That's y'all cool. Come.
So let me get a plug in.
All right.
Because I haven't done it much. The 2017 East Coast Golf Management Salt Air Jam is May the 19th and the 20th. I say and the 20th because there's a golf tournament, the Salt Air Jam Scramble at Diamondback Golf Club at Woodland Valley on Saturday the 20th. But on the 19th, we got five bands. Gates open at 1 o'clock at the Sand Hills Bank Amphitheater in North Myrtle Beach. Starts with Mr. 50s, 1950s rock and roll show. Jim Quick and Coastline with his own version or his own brand of Swamp Soul. Up
what
and coming.
Soul? What soul?
Swamp Soul.
I've never heard that term.
Yeah, you need to come see Jim Quick. Trey Calloway, an absolute up and coming country music star, will be there. And then the Tim Clark Band, high energy Tim Clark Band. And then we're going to end it with Edwin McCain, full band performance by Edwin McCain. All this to benefit cystic fibrosis. We've almost completed everything to get our 501c3 nonprofit organization done. Very close. We'll be done. We might be done by the event. Man, that would just be great if we do. It's Salt Air Foundation. It's a 501c3 for the purpose of raising money for cystic fibrosis. So had Edwin McCain in the studio Sunday. He stopped by and he wanted to come in and get his picture took with me. Yeah. No, he had him come in and do a nice interview for the event. And I got a good story out of him that we hear so many stories about CF patients and their struggles and death. One very close to us here was a guy and a girl in their teens met each other in treatment and they fell in love with each other. One thing that can't happen is two CF patients can't really breathe the same air. They can't be within 3 feet of each other for the bacteria exchange that is deadly. They knew that anyway, and the only thing they wanted was to be together. So they got married and both of them died before they were 20. And it's just a really heartbreaking, sad story. Edwin comes in, on the other hand, who is Edwin's 47 years old, and one of his friends from where he grew up has cystic fibrosis, same age as him, 47 years old, and still going. So it's really good to hear someone living to that age. The average life expectancy is age 38. And you guys know why we're so close to it here. My grandson Eli is 7 and has cystic fibrosis, so...
He is 7.
Yeah, Salt Air Jam and Salt Air Foundation now is that's our focus, and you can get tickets at saltairjam.com. They're $25 in advance, $30 at the gate. Anybody that would like to give themselves for this thing as a volunteer, we need lots of them, and so there's a place on there to sign up as a volunteer if you want to do that. If you come on down, we'll. I wish I could say I'd give everybody hotel rooms, but we let as many people stay at the house as we can get in there. But we don't have the funds right now to put everybody up. But we'll get you into the concert, feed you good. We'll treat you so many ways you're bound to like one of them. And you get to give your time for a good cause. But some of the things we're looking for are stage hands. We need at least 6 stage hands to load in and 6 to load out. Load in's about 8 in the morning. Load out's going to be about 10 at night. So that's a long day. We're probably going to need to swap some folks out. We need ticket takers and ticket tearers, and we need ushers to seat people. We need people working the hospitality suite. We need people emptying trash cans. All those things require volunteer help. So, and we also need some security. If you know any retired law officers or anybody or army veterans or military veterans that would like to give their time to do that, we can put you to work. Saltairjam.com is where you get that information. And I haven't really pushed it much here, but I'm going to until May 19th. Something that's really special to all of us, and that's all I got to say about that. Thanks to all you guys for helping put this thing together. Love you. Mean it. It was a great show. Y'all did a good job. Thanks to all you fans that let us be part of your Tuesday nights. We still don't know why you do, but we're glad you do. Thank you for doing that. But as always, we want to say a special thanks to the men and women that serve our military. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can come in here and do this. Each and every one of you, good night, and God bless.